Radio Newark, the home of Radio Newark Sport. Weeknights from 7. Radio Newark Sport, brought to you with Smith's Timber Merchants for all your fencing, decking and DIY needs on Appleton Gate, Newark. Visit smithstimber.co.uk.
8 Young Cup winners, 1 school teacher, 1 Midlands champion, a proud president and a cricket international. All in the next hour. It can only be Radio Newark Sport. I'm Mick Bradley and live from Sport HQ. I think this one's going to be a little bit hectic. And as ever though, we start with the top stories making the national news. Well, actually, we start with one story that's making the national news and is amusing Tony and myself. Cricket Australia are to send captain Steve Smith, vice captain David Warner and batsman Cameron Bancroft home from South Africa for the ball tampering in the third test in Cape Town. However, chief executive James Sutherland says head coach Darren Lehman was not involved in the controversy and will remain in his post. Sutherland added that more sanctions will be handed down to Smith, Warner and Bancroft within the next 24 hours and they would be significant. He said it is not in the spirit of the game. It is not a good day for Australian cricket. Wicketkeeper Tim Payne has been named as the captain for the rest of the series. And former England captain Michael Vaughan is pretty sure Australia were ball tampering during the 4-0 Ashes series victory in the winter. I look at the amount of tape some of the fielders have worn, particularly during the Ashes series at mid-on and mid-off. You don't have to name names, they know who they are. Vaughan is not the only former international cricketer to have suspicions, and former South African fast bowler Fanny de Villiers says the camera operators were told to keep an eye on the Australians while they was in the field. I said earlier on, they cannot get reverse swing in the 26th and 27th over, they're up to something. Keep those cameras on them, you will catch them out. And an hour and a half later, and a lot of hard scrutiny, guess what? They found Mr. Bancroft. And he was caught out. Back to Vaughan, and he said the Australian side for 2 or 3 years have not behaved in a fashion that you would want to be around. They have been abusive at times and got away with it. Well, Mr. Vaughan, they haven't anymore. Hours after our little comments last night, you've had time to think about all this. Have you any sympathy now for what went off? Do you think, oh, it was only ball tampering, one match ban is enough? Or have you changed your stance at all?
None whatsoever.
Now, not because they're Australians and it's funny, but because it's only ball tampering.
Because of the spirit of cricket, it just goes against everything that everybody has held dear for more than 200 years. It's just ridiculous.
And that's the point, isn't it, Tony? The fact it's cold and it's calculated.
Mm.
It didn't just happen. Somebody pulled me alongside at work today and said, well, footballers cheat all the time. Yeah, they do. But it happens. You know, you fall over easily. That's cheating. But you fall over. It's not premeditated. It's not calculated. You didn't get together, I hope you didn't, and get together and talk about it earlier on.
I saw today that they couldn't get life bans because it wasn't match fixing. How fixed was that match that suddenly a tumble of wickets came as a result of somebody finding something in his underpants?
It is a form of match fixing.
It's a total match fixing. And it's athletes who take drugs should be banned for life. Cricketers who cheat should be banned for life. It's simple.
I mean, so far, the ICC have come out complete fools with egg on their faces for doing a one-match ban and walking away from it. The Australian Cricket Council, if they don't think for 1 minute that Darren Lehman had anything to do with it, let's just assume he didn't, because that's what he says, so we believe him.
That's what he says, we don't believe him.
What is the head coach doing if he doesn't know what his players are doing? He's not doing his job. He should know everything about them players. That's his job.
It was a joint decision taken by the senior men at the cricket team, within the cricket team. Doesn't the coach figure as the most senior person in any cricket team?
Exactly. There should be no whitewash on this, and I'm sorry, Darren Lehman, even if you are completely innocent, you are tarnished by the very fact you are the man in charge. You.
Even if he was a really nice character, then, you know, it's still wrong. But what he's shown himself to be over 5 years as the Australian coach, cheerio.
Yeah, he's led them to be what they are now, nasty, obnoxious, whatever other word you want to use, and this is why the whole of the world are laughing.
Mm.
And there's no sympathy whatsoever. The local headlines. And it was a cracking night last night as tries from Jess Weaver, two from Megan Stevens, Anya Richardson and Alex Clack helped the New York under-18 rugby girls be crowned Midland champions. They beat Northampton 25-10 at Leicester Forest. And Chewchew Reid retained the spring football trophy with a 2-1 victory over Collingham's John Blow to complete a good day as their cross-country runners brought home a silver medal from the county championships. And a tough first round at expert level for Finlay Cranage. He didn't manage to get out the qualifying rounds and was a little bit disappointed. He'll bounce back in round two at Doncaster. But Newark Swimming Club's Jessica Reid, gold medals all round for the young superstar at the Notts ASA Championships.
This is Radio Newark Sport.
I almost think we've been here before on this one. In fact, we have been here before on this one, because this time last year, Chewchew Reid School came into the studio to talk to us about winning the primary school's football championship. And last Saturday, the weather improved like we knew it would, because it's always a nice morning for the school's football, and it's always a rubbish morning for the school's netball. But it's a nice morning for the football, and we all went down to Lowfields, who, once again, we thank them so much for putting on a cracking show. Amy Hunt's here to talk to us. Amy Hunt? Amy Fell's here to talk to us. Oh, too many Amys. Amy Fell's here to talk to us, and the boys are here to talk to us. You be quiet. And the boys are here to talk to us. Amy, first of all, how many schools?
18 schools on Saturday. All of the association schools. So there was two groups of nine. So it's a long morning, very long morning.
It was a long morning, and it was a long early afternoon as well. But we got there in the end. We did it with a lot of close games and a lot of good football. Mm-hmm. Now, before we talk to this mob, first of all, I've got to say, boys, I know you won it, I know you're the champions, but you didn't get the goal of the day award. The best goal of the day that I saw was not scored by one of you lot. So that's all sad. But you won the trophy, that's all that matters. Anyway, the best goal of the day that I saw was actually scored by a young lady.
By who, sorry?
By a young lady.
Oh.
I know her first name is Emily, and I know she plays for Holy Trinity. The ball came across from the right, Tony, onto that. She dragged it with her right foot to make the space, and then hit it with her left foot back across the face of the goal to wrong foot the goalkeeper. It was absolute perfection. It really was. It was a perfect goal. Drag on one foot, across the face of the goal on the other.
The boys need to take note then.
Oh, the boys definitely need to take note.
We've got Holy Trinity in the next cup match coming up, so something to watch out for.
Well, if any of you go out there and think she's just a girl, be very, very careful, because she may just be a girl, but she's one heck of a footballer.
I think we teach them enough not to underestimate.
Don't take anything for granted there, because from what I saw on Saturday, she's going places.
She may be a girl, but nobbler in the first minute.
Well, that's your standard.
Sorry.
This is why you support Leeds United and these boys are footballers. That, in a nutshell, is the difference. Thank you, Mr. Smith. I enjoyed that. Okay, I'm going to ask for a spokesman, because my goalkeeper's not come tonight. He's gone camera shy, so he's not come tonight. So I'm going to ask for a spokesman. Well, the captain's the goalkeeper, isn't he?
We've got joint captains.
We've got joint captains. Yeah. Who's the captain then? Would you like to come onto that mic there, young man, and tell us who you are?
I'm Harry.
Harry, so what's it like to be captain of this crew?
Very good, because these are all a good football team. work together very well.
You went into the morning, didn't you? Because I mean, most people thought that you was probably favourites to win it. So that was the pressure was there to start with because everybody expected you to win it. How did it starts off in the league format, didn't it? Before you get to the semi final and the final. So the league matches, how did they go?
So we started off all right. We got two draws, and then after we beat our other tutor Reed Fernwood, we ended up that pushed our boost up a bit, and then we ended up winning the rest of the games, pushing up to the making us to the semi finals.
What's it like to play Fernwood?
Very good, because if we win, then makes them under pressure to see if we can beat them again.
Is there a bit of sporting rivalry between the two tutor aides?
Not really. They don't train together. They don't really meet. They don't really see each other. It is like they're two separate schools. But I think there's just the same rivalry with any other schools that there would be. But there is that, oh, we're playing against each other. We're all part of the same school, even though we're different sites, which probably makes it a bit different.
Who's next going to have a chat to me? Somebody come to the mic. Come on. Come on, Mr. Picker. Come on. He's never short of a word, are you? Now, you had to make a decision on Saturday morning, didn't you? Because I understand you could have gone running.
Yeah.
Football one did it. And you won the trophy, so football was a good winner, wasn't it? Was it a good morning for you? Did you score a goal?
Yeah, it was a good morning. I did score a goal.
You did score, did you? Excellent stuff. You're the quiet one of the team, aren't you? We very rarely hear from you.
I might be.
Is he the quiet one of the team, boys?
No!
Miss Fell said you was the quiet one.
Was I?
I think I said it with a little laugh.
Yeah, I think you probably did. Who's next? Come on, somebody's going to talk to me. Don't go shy on me. Who have we got now?
Tobias.
Okay, Tobias, where do you play in this team?
Left back.
I've told you before, Tony, left back. The most skillful position on a football field is left back. Stuart Pearce played left back. I played left back.
No, you were left back.
No, that's true, yeah. So I take it to... You and the defence end just held it together while this lot tapped in the odd goal at the other end. It was all down to a good defences performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the keeper.
And the keeper. The keeper's camera shy, he's not here tonight.
I think there's only
it?
One goal, Yvette,
yeah.
On Saturday, wasn't there, boys?
No, it was like
in the final against John Blow.
Yeah. It was from kickoff.
Yeah. I think that was maybe a slight defensive error.
Whose fault was the goal then?
Ben.
Ben, come on, Ben. Come on, Ben. Ben.
Ben didn't
ring. I saw two of you there, to be fair. He turned you back on the ball.
Poor old Ben's getting the blame for the goal. It wasn't your fault, was it, Ben?
No.
No, what happened?
Well, I didn't see half of it.
So you did turn your back on it then?
Well, kind of.
You see, the trouble is you have to turn your back on it, because if you ball hits that head with that haircut of yours, you don't want to ruin that, do you?
No.
And you can rely on the forwards to score the two goals.
Yeah.
Who scored the goals in the final? Young man, come on then, onto the mic. You are?
Ryan.
You're Ryan. You're the first or the second goal?
Last.
You're the last goal, so you're the winning goal.
Yeah.
So you're the hero of the morning then, weren't you?
Yeah.
Talk us through the goal.
Well, we got rid of it from defence. Harry played it into Finn, and then Finn passed it into me. The keeper started coming out, and then I hit it with my left foot into the bottom corner.
See, left foot again, skill. All the best footballers are left footed.
So he's right footed, not left footed.
Yeah, but if you hit with your left foot, it means you can do both. Or was it a miss kick?
Miss kick, probably.
Good lad. Who got the first goal? You again.
Yeah,
come
that's
on,
me
then.
Again.
Yeah, you again. So you led by example then.
Yeah, I did.
Talk us through the first goal.
So I think it was Noah through the middle who passed it through. And then I did a cheeky toe poke past the goalkeeper.
A cheeky toe poke, okay.
Past the keeper.
This is why he's the captain, is it, Amy? A cheeky toe poke. Right. Who have we not spoken to?
We've got three we've not spoken to.
Come on then, let's have who we're not spoken to. Young man, your name? Oh, prefect.
My name's Finn.
Finn. Does that say prefect?
No, school counsellor.
School counsellor? Oh, that's posh, isn't it?
Got many roles.
Tony, behave. Got a school counsellor. Where do you play in the team?
I play forward.
You're forward, so you sort of getting the goals for these two, was you?
Yeah.
You were doing all the hard work while these two took all the glory.
Yeah,
that's about right, isn't it?
Yeah.
And but they won't have mentioned what you did to set them up and make sure
Harry
they had an easy
pop. I think Harry just mentioned Finn.
It's a good team effort.
Harry misspelled sticking up for you. Captain's teacher's pet.
Exactly.
Who else have we got? Because we're running out of time quickly. Two more.
They're fighting now.
We're fighting to go. Who?
My name's Noah.
Noah, and where do you play, Noah?
In the centre of midfield.
Centre midfield. You're orchestrating everything then, aren't you?
Yeah.
Excellent stuff. And do you play for anybody else? Is it just Chuchun, or do you play for anybody
out
there?
I also play for Warriors on a Saturday and a Sunday.
I think quite a few of you play for Warriors, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Yes and yeah. No's yeah. And all. We're going to start an argument here. Was it a good morning then, Noah? I mean, you won it. I won't say easily. You had to work hard, didn't you?
Yeah, we worked hard as a team, as a team effort, but we did our jobs and we did it quite well.
Because I think, right at the end of the semi-final, right in the final seconds, Harley made a save when him and the other player hit each other, and I honestly thought there was a nasty injury. But it was a very, very brave save. And that's the difference, isn't it, between glory and a penalty shootout, they could have gone anywhere.
Yeah.
But you're good at penalties, you lot, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, he was last year.
Good at saving them.
I'm definitely.
Who's last man?
Me.
You're the shy one, are you? You're the shy one. Your name is?
Ollie.
Ollie, so you can be my favourite tonight, Ollie. What position do you play, Ollie?
Defence.
Your defence, what, middle of defence?
Right back.
Right. Can you head a ball?
Yeah.
How do you head a ball?
By...
With the top of the head or the forehead?
Forehead.
The forehead. That's where you head a ball. Good, good. I know you're left or right footed.
Right.
How many of you then now, although you can stay where you are, how many of you leave Chuchereed in the summer for pastures new? Or how many of you is going to try and retain the trophy for the third year next year? Who have we still got at Chuchereed next year?
We'll have three of them next year.
Three of them next year. And you've got to find yourself a new football team.
We've got to find ourselves a new goalkeeper, more importantly.
Anybody fancy goalkeeper?
No.
Yeah, there's a couple there with their hands
you
up.
You won't be here.
Oh. Well, they're going far, aren't they?
just
very quickly, Miss Bell. The cross-country runners, fantastic performance.
Fantastic performance. First time all of the year four runners had gone. Some of the year five runners had been there before. But fantastic performance. We had a 4th, 16th and 19th in the girls. We had a 12th and 20th in the boys. But overall, the girls finished in team silver. And the boys finished 5th overall. I heard it was a very, very hard course. Two forests that they had to run through. Hardly any training. Some of them just thrown straight into it. And they did brilliantly. And I know you're talking to Joseph tomorrow. He had his national race in the afternoon, he did brilliantly.
Yes, he did. Under the circumstances, he did. And he's going to come on. And I'll tell you what, the fact he's coming on to Newark Radio tomorrow night to talk about a bad morning speaks volumes for him.
We said it didn't matter where he'd come. He's inspired so many children at Chuchereed to take up cross-country running that he's done his job just by doing that. And nobody's ever at Chuchereed or in the Newark schools, as far as I'm aware, have reached the national final twice.
And that's a fantastic. And he's going to tell us about it tomorrow. Boys, thank you so much for coming in to see us, telling us all about your latest cut run, even if you have forgot to bring the trophy. But I won't hold that against you. That's Miss Fell's fault. But even if you have forgot to bring the trophy. Boys, the winners of the Chuchereed schools. When do you play your Nottinghamshire thing?
It was cancelled the other week when it snowed. Yeah. 17th of April, Tuesday night now.
So another trophy, and you can all come back. If you win that, you can all come back again.
Yeah.
Okay, right, boys. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye. Now, for the ones of you that listen to this show regularly, you will know that despite the fact we keep saying we don't have any favourites, we do actually have one favourite team, and that's the Rugby Club Under 18 girls. We followed them through from when they first started. We helped them when they first started, and we stuck with them all the way. And last night they went to Leicester Forest on the 4G pitch of the RFU's 4G pitch there. to play the rearranged Midlands final against Old Northamptonians. And to tell us about it, we've got on the telephone a young lady that not only played, scored two tries, Megan Stevens. Megan, welcome to Radio New York Sport.
Hi.
Hi, Megan.
Nice to meet you.
How long have you been playing for the Rugby Club Girls?
This is my second season playing for them.
So,
last
night was the highlight, the pinnacle of your rugby career so far.
Definitely, it was really fun to play.
So you got to the final, and obviously this is the biggest rugby match you've ever played on. What about nerves? Do you suffer from nerves?
Yes, I do sometimes. But you just got, once you're on the pitch, you just got to get over it and just put the effort in for your team, and help each other win.
Now it falls to you to tell us about the game, and I think you was first try scorer, was you?
Yes, I was.
Just talk us through the try, Megan.
Oh God! So I was obviously on the wing, and Jess did a little bit of a wrap with Anya, her inside centre, and it just got passed out to me, and I ran in about 10 meters away, maybe from the try line, to score the first try.
And the feeling to score a try in a big final?
Oh, it's brilliant! You feel on top of the world, really. Like you've made a contribution.
Then it went slightly wrong, didn't it? Because Old Northamptonians went down the other end and promptly scored two tries and went into the lead.
Yes, they did. I mean, after that, we were, our minds were in it. We wanted to come back better and beat them.
And that's what you did. And it was Anya, Alex, yourself and Jess who scored the tries to make the difference. Your second try of the night, how did that go?
That was really good. I mean, as a winger, just being there for the support when running in is really important. So when Jess passed out the ball, all I had to do was just run to score the second try for myself, yeah.
I think you're a lot quicker than your dad was when he used to play football.
Yes, me too.
You've won the Midland Championships. This puts you into the next round, the national finals, or what is it now, Megan?
So our next game is against Castleford, and if we win this one, we'll go down to London, hopefully to be the national winners.
Megan, while you've been talking, Tony and I have been listening in the studio, obviously, but with me in the studio is Mr. Alan Swain. Alan is the president of Newark Rugby Club, and I think he wants to say a couple of words to you.
Hello, Megan.
Okay. Hello.
I just want to congratulate you and all the team. I did send a text to Mark last night, both before the game, wishing you all the best, and after the game, congratulating you. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to come and spectate last night, but I'll certainly be there in 2 weeks' time to see us win through to the national final. So, very well done, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the team in action.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We're so proud of you all, Megan. It was a fantastic achievement, and to be crowned Midland champions. I know you're taking time out from work. Please thank the bosses, wherever you are, to let you sort of wander off and come on the phone to us. We do appreciate it. Megan Stevens, two tries in the Midlands final. That's what memories are made of. Megan?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what memories are made of, and you're going to remember that for an awful long time, I think.
I certainly will, yeah.
Good stuff. Let's see. No pressure. You've just got all to do it again in 2 weeks' time.
Yes, it'll be another challenge, but I'm looking forward to it.
Good stuff, and we'll all be rooting for you and keeping in touch. Megan, we'll talk to you again very soon, hopefully.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, thank you. Bye. Bye-bye. Megan Stevens there, a second season of playing rugby and already a hero. Two tries in a final. It doesn't get any better than that, does it?
What was the final score?
25-10.
Excellent.
So it was a wonderful, wonderful night and wonderful victory. And talking of wonderful nights and wonderful victories, a wonderful victory for New York Rugby Club on Saturday evening. Now, you know, last week, let's just think back to last week, Alan Swain came in and he told us about this massive event that was going off at Kellam Road, and everybody was a little bit nervous because it was the biggest of the big that was putting on, and for it to go correct in every way, shape or form was asking an awful lot. It did go correct in every way, shape or form, and Mr. Swain's come back tonight and he's going to tell us all about it. First of all, Alan, the rugby club is more than the first team. Is more than what we saw on Saturday night. It is about the youngsters, because the rugby club is one of the six top junior clubs in the whole of the country. And once again, the youngsters did you proud last night.
I was absolutely delighted with for the girls, for Mark and Claire and all the rest of the coaching team, the girls. Now, to see what they have achieved in just a small number of years is absolutely fantastic. And I know we've got ambitious plans to take that forward. But they are a special group, you know, the under-18s. They've played together for a number of years. They have some hugely talented players. And let's hope they can go all the way again.
It's going to be hard against Castleford because they play a different type of rugby. They don't play it correctly like we do. Yes, Mr. Smith, I know it's your neck of the woods.
It didn't go well in every way, shape or form, did it? Because I believe you introduced
a
6'8" rugby player to the crowd and gave his wrong name out.
That is not the rugby club's fault, that's me. That's me.
Oh, sorry.
If you're going to pick on anybody, pick on somebody that's 6'8". I was in total awe because I needed the stepladder to talk to him. It was an absolute charm to speak to.
Good job.
It is a good job, actually. Alan, let's recap and tell us what the game was all about and what you was hoping to achieve.
Right. The purposes of the game were twofold. Firstly, it was to celebrate the life of Brian Fisher and everything that he did for the club in the 55 years that he was at the club. So it was a memorial match for Brian. And secondly, it was a fundraising event, a major fundraising event to help us contribute towards completing the final phase of the new clubhouse, which I've been on here before and spoken about before.
So the planning of this started, you enlisted the help of other members of the rugby club who knew the correct people.
No, that isn't correct, actually. So this was absolutely the brainchild of Tom Cartledge, who is the CEO at Benoist Architects in town. Tom is the parent of one of our under nines.
So Tom actually came up with the idea. Wasn't born in the rugby club.
No, absolutely not. This was Tom's idea. He has some good social connections with Simon Shaw, the guy that you got the name wrong.
Yep. You're as bad as him.
Difficult to resist. So he knows Simon Shaw and a couple of other of these guys like Ian Bonshaw and Kevin Yates. And it was he who persuaded them to assemble a side. And then one of the difficulties was finding a side to play against. And then Rob Wildman did his magic and found the RAF vet side called the RAF Vultures. And that was all kind of all agreed by middle of January, I would think, which gave us about 8 weeks to try and bring it all together, which was quite a challenge.
It fell into place with the RAF, didn't it? Because, of course, they have started their tournament against the Navy
an inter-services tournament every year.
So from their point of view, everything, the timing was brilliant.
It was.
I, again, incorrectly, was under the assumption that the International Barbarians basically was a group of lads that went around playing rugby as a group in these sort of matches. But what Tom had actually done, he'd actually not only got them to agree to play rugby. Some of them, it was the first time they've actually played rugby in an awful lot of months, if not years. It actually got them out of total retirement to play rugby. So it's not just a question of, oh, it's our turn this week, you're going on somewhere next week. These guys came to Newark to play in this match. And I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, 4-0, by the way.
What more can you ask? You know, so it's brilliant.
We provided them some hotel accommodation for Saturday night. But they were absolutely magnificent, both on and off the pitch. They stayed the night and for several hours into the morning as well. But we'll talk about that a little later. And we've had thank yous from them all since Saturday night, which is amazing. Bear in mind that we owe them the favours, really. But I know they had a really good time. And we had one email that I read just before I came out this evening, just saying how much he enjoyed himself, how he loved the club, how it's a traditional rugby club, and just wishing us all the success. So really nice comments from everybody.
So the planning was done. The marquee was up. The programmes was done. Everything was in place. But then you've still got to think, will somebody come and watch it? Are the supporters going to turn up? Will we get the numbers that we need? And well, we did, Alan.
Well, we did. But before we talk about the match, I must tell you a little story, because the marquee was put up on the Monday. Then on Tuesday night, one of our members thought he smelt gas faintly. And what had happened during the erection of the marquee, one of the stakes that held at the marquee severed the new gas main to the new part of the club. So,
oh dear.
There were quite a lot of anxious people on Tuesday night and Wednesday, but this showed the club to its absolute best. So we got a team together, we excavated it to find out where the leak was coming from. We'd obviously turned it off. By Wednesday, we'd completed all the excavation work and isolated it. We then brought in our plumber, some specialist plumbing equipment was required, some welding up. I'm no technical person. So on Thursday, we actually had the job done. And by Friday, we were all ready to start setting up the marquee. So that was a bit of fun. And one of the nice things, or funny things, I think, is that the owner of the marquee company is chairman of Southall Rugby Club.
That was the comment. We were packing down, and I heard the part of the president's speech. And I went, okay, I wonder what that means.
Yeah, so when I said that thanks to Southwell for sabotaging the event, or trying to, that was a tongue-in-cheek. But to be fair, Buster Marquees have been absolutely magnificent, so no complaints at all. Just accidents happen, but it just showed our club to its best effect again.
And it's brilliant. The crowd did come.
It did.
They did come in. Any ideas?
I reckon there were about 700 or 800 people there. We have 500 to the evening event plus the players, and I reckon there were another 200-300 people, including the parents of the kids that played at half time and things like that. So no, it's as busy as I've ever seen the club for a match.
I'm not sure what anybody expected of the match. It was going to be an exhibition match. It was going to be one-sided. It was just going to go through the motions. I don't think anybody knew. But what we actually got was a good, competitive game of rugby. And every now and again, Tony, the skill level was it had to be seen to be believed.
I mean, you're absolutely right with that, Mick. None of us knew what to expect, whether it would be one-sided or what have you. But it was an absolute cracking game of rugby. And I think that was one of the reasons why just so many people really enjoyed themselves, not just in the afternoon, early evening watching the game, but then later on, because everybody was talking about the game. And some of the skills of one or two of the ex-internationals, you know, it was just great to behold.
You had to see it, not to, you know, see it. It was just poetry. But some of the tackling...
It was
hardened Newark committee members, regulars, who see rugby every week, was going, It was full on, Mr. Swain, wasn't it?
It was absolutely full on. It was a really, really good competitive game, but played absolutely in the right spirit, refereed by one of our own mini parents as well. So that made it really good. As
I probably don't think he'd had an easier game in his life, had he?
He probably hadn't, but seeing Simon Shaw at 6 foot, whatever he is, you know, just being able to move the ball so quickly, it was super. And Nicky Little, 70 odd caps for Fiji, he's still some player.
There's muscles, Tony, where you haven't even got body. I mean, there really is. It just was muscle. I mean, yes, he was some. And they all enjoyed it, didn't they?
Oh, they absolutely did thoroughly enjoy it.
And you know, there's something about sport under floodlights. Mm. And when the lights went on, yeah,
magnificent.
There's just something, just that extra bit of atmosphere, isn't there?
There was an absolutely terrific atmosphere. You know, it was kind of dusk for about half of the first half. Then it gradually got darker, the atmosphere got better as the game got more competitive. It was really good. But a little story, coming out of Saturday. Nicky Little, as I said, 70-odd caps for Fiji. He is the director of rugby at a school down in Kent, in Canterbury in Kent. And on Sunday, as soon as he got home, he wrote a thank you to us saying he would like to bring his school side up to Newark this year, if possible.
That's wonderful.
So we're trying to facilitate that for the last weekend of April. And we've got a bit of work to do to get the arrangements right, but we're hoping that we can entertain Nicky Little and his team.
Oh, that would be lovely, wouldn't it?
From Kent. Yeah.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic. Then afterwards, you all went for Korean, a pint or two or three. Yep. Or what time did it finish?
I left a little earlier, obviously, because I'm quite old. But some of the younger people apparently stayed till about 3:45. What I'm not sure whether it's 3:45. Old time or 3:45 new time.
Of course, that would have gone out the window, wouldn't it?
So it's either 3:45 or 3:45. I'm not sure which, but we had a really, really good night.
Mr. Swain's one rule for the evening was they'd bought a record amount of beer and none of it was going back. Did any of it go back?
Well, they didn't quite succeed in that. That was virtually the only failure of the night. David, our barman, reported to me on Sunday that he did still have some left, but we did a great job because we negotiated with the brewery to have 12 additional large barrels on sale or return, so there's no exposure to the club from a financial perspective because we certainly didn't want to run out.
And without you actually saying any figures, has the night helped towards stage three?
It has. I've got a meeting immediately after this interview. We're meeting up the organising team where we'll look at the final numbers. We had penciled in a contribution of 25,000 for the day and the evening, and we know that we'll have exceeded that, but we're not quite sure how much yet. So I'm absolutely thrilled, and of course this is all going into the big piggy bank towards completing the new clubhouse.
And of course, the ironic thing in all this, isn't it, is if you go into the old clubhouse before you do start knocking it down, which is going to happen in the next few weeks, you will see a little sign, unless you're taking it down already, that says Fisher's Folly. And of course, the old clubhouse was the brainchild of Brian Fisher, and unfortunately he's not with us to see the new clubhouse, but this is his legacy towards the new clubhouse.
Well, on that one, Rita Fisher and Brian's family, most of them were there on Saturday, so that was nice. And when we say goodbye to the old clubhouse in 2 weeks' time on April the 11th, we have a lunch on the Saturday, on the 7th. Rita will also be there, so she'll have been there from the outset, as one or two other members have as well, since it was built in 1964. But on April the 7th, it's going to be quite an emotional day. A lot of very fond memories, a lot of nostalgia, and we've got 160 people having lunch prior to watching the Colts play. It's going to be an absolutely fantastic fantastic occasion.
And of course we're going to make sure that we come along as well. The match itself in the afternoon is the Colts against...
Yeah, the Colts are playing Melton Mowbray. The first team were due to be playing Bakewell, but that game, as we know, has now been cancelled with Bakewell withdrawing from the league this year. So what we wanted to do is to make the best of that occasion, and we've got a fantastic Colts side this year. We know Melton have got a really good side. We've played them once before and just beat them in a very close encounter. So for these Colts to play in front of at least 200 people, it's going to be a great occasion for them.
So if anybody wants to say goodbye to the old clubhouse at Kellam Road, the 7th of April, what time is the kickoff?
Kickoff is 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock, a proper time. Kickoff time at last. It took all season to get there, but we've managed it.
We certainly have, yeah.
Alan, it was fantastic to be part of it. It was an absolute privilege to stand on that pitch alongside you and see that fantastic crowd and that wonderful game. And it was just a night that's going to go down in the memories of Newark Sport.
It will be. It will be one of those great nights in our memories. And I'd just like to reiterate my thanks to you and the rest of the Radio Newark team that supported us so well. So thank you very much.
I think the
and I'd just like to say,
yes, here we go.
I'd just like to say thank you, Mick, for not taking the opportunity to say that there was beer left because I wasn't there.
He did actually cross my mind. Alan, brilliant. Thank you so much. Still to come tonight. We're going to find out what Matthew Hoggard had to say, because he was there as well. He was the MC in the auction afterwards, and I understand that was fairly hilarious.
Yeah, Matthew was on, fortunately, on the same table as myself, and he was really good company. He was an excellent MC, told a couple of marginally risque jokes, etc., as you would expect at that kind of function. But it really was in the best of taste, and it was just a brilliant night, as you say. I lost count of the number of people that said to me how much they'd enjoyed it. And, of course, from a club perspective, the auction was incredibly successful.
I did ask him about the break in Australian news, and then I turned it off and put it away, and we talked on a bit, because it wasn't for this show, the reply, but I fully agreed with him. a fantastic night, and one that, as I say, was so pleased to be part of. I took the opportunity to have a chat with Matthew Hoggard after the rugby. We did start by talking about what was then the breaking news about the Australians and the cheating that they've been doing. But Matthew's reply was probably not fit for this radio show at the moment. But let's just say that there's not a lot of love lost between England international cricketers and Australian international cricketers. So we went off that subject and we went on to my other pet cricket subject, T20 against Test matches. We've had many debates in this studio with yourself and different people on the future of cricket. So I wanted to get the opinion of an England international. So this is where we started, by asking him where he thinks the future lies.
I still say that Test cricket is the pinnacle of any cricketing talent over the longer format of 5 days. I think the razzmatazz is fantastic in T20. The skill level is so high in T20. It's brought on so many new shots, so many new balls. It's dominating cricket at the moment, and it's got such a following, which is brilliant. It's bringing so much money in the game, but it is endangering Test cricket.
One of the worries, and locally here in Nottinghamshire, Alex Ailes has decided to stop playing the long format of the game, and other cricketers are going to follow, aren't they?
Yeah, we've already seen Adil Rashid do that, and I think the PCA do a survey every single year. So the Professional Cricket Association do a survey and ask what is the most important format game and what is the truth for. And at the moment, Test cricket is still holding sway and still number one. And that's why Test cricket is surviving. But that number and the equality, it's nearly par, where T20 cricket is getting up there with the amount of competitions that are around the world at the moment. It's the IPL, the Big Bash, the Caribbean League. The fact that it is big money and you can earn maybe four times as much playing in a four-week period than you can playing a year in Test cricket. Why would you put your body through a year of Test cricket when you can just go and play a four-week competition and take home all that? And it shouldn't all be about the money. But again, cricket and sport is a profession when you are playing that for a livelihood. And I think players now are weighing up the options and thinking they can have a longer career and a more lucrative career just playing in shorter formats.
It would be remiss of me not to ask you the greatest memories from your career. I would assume that it is Test cricket, and I assume it's probably against Australia.
Yeah, obviously 2005 is the obvious one that springs to mind. Not beating Australia in 19 years and then going off an at-home series, and with such a great series, it ebbed and flowed. Every Test match could have gone either way, except for the first one, I suppose. But every other Test match could have gone both ways, and the ups and downs in each game, in each day, in each session was fantastic. It's one of it is the best series that I've played in. There's a lot of people that watched a lot more cricket saying it's one of the best series that they've ever seen. I was very lucky to play quite a few series. I played in South Africa. I remember getting 12 wickets in the game in Joburg to help England win. That's it. Not only that game, but that series. I managed to pack up a hat-trick in the West Indies. I've got so many fond memories of playing, but you're right, all in Test cricket.
And finally, the greatest Test cricketer in an England shirt you played with. I say that because Kevin Peterson seems to have retired this week. He's very much Marmite. You love him or hate him. Where would you put Peterson?
On a plane back to South Africa? Yeah, fantastic cricketer. He's fantastic watch, box office to watch. His record stands for itself. So as a cricketer, you can't take anything away from him. He is a very talented person. Unfortunately, as you say, he's Marmite. He did divide a lot of changing rooms and he did pay the price.
So the best England cricketer you've played alongside then?
Likes Andrew Flintoff, Marcus Trescothick was very underrated, I would say. But Marcus Trescothick was a brilliant player. I'll go with him.
How much does a professional top of his game when he does retire, how difficult is it?
It's extremely difficult to get them highs and the buzz back. You're never going to do that. So you have to find something that you can get your teeth stuck into. It's very difficult being told what time to turn up, what to wear, chasing around after a little red thing or a little white thing on a cricket pitch. Life is simple, life is easy. Then you retire and you have to find something else to do. So it isn't easy, even though you know that it's coming and you try and plan. Nothing can prepare you for missing that camaraderie in the changing rooms and that buzz of being out in the middle and living the highs and lows that you get in every game.
It must be the case. You could always join Goffey, of course, and go into the media.
Yeah, there's lots of people in the media. Goffey's brilliant. I love Goffey, listening to Goffey. He knows everything about nothing. And he's brilliant. He believes himself all the time. And he's a great guy. I was very lucky enough for him to be in the Yorkshire dressing room when I was growing up. And I learnt a lot from that man. There's only a finite amount of places in the media, and it's very hard fought to get them places. And I think the people there are doing a great job at the moment.
So what's Tony Smith got in common with Darren Goff? They all know a lot about nothing. Just picking on one or two other things that Matthew said, and we do thank him very, very much for taking time out to talk to us, of course. I think he got the T20 and the Test cricket thing. It's a worry. It is a worry. And the events of this week are not going to help.
It's a worry for traditionalists, because T20 cricket is the future of the game, and that's just the way that the modern world is. Instant success, instant joy, instant, you know, result. And Americans will never understand how you can play for 5 days and you might end up with a draw. And now the kids of today, the 8-year-olds, the 9-year-olds growing up and loving cricket, they're all at T20 matches, not at Test matches.
Americans don't understand sport at all. They don't even call rounders. They call it basketball, baseball, baseball, don't they? And anyway, so yes, I thought he talked very well on that one about the worries. I was a little shocked of the best cricketer he's ever played with.
Yeah.
Taking nothing away from Trescothick, he's a cracking batsman, but he was playing at a time when there was an awful lot of high-level skill flying around.
Yeah, I would have thought that the sort of people that that Hoggy was around, I didn't think he'd pick Marcus Truscothick. But, you know, as you say, Truscothick, great cricketer, but, you know, there were some... I would have thought he would have gone for someone with a sort of more of a glamorous aura around him, such as Freddie Flintoff.
Yeah, it was an interesting comments about Peterson as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. One of our own actually picked up Kevin Peterson from Heathrow. Gary Lambert was sent down there by Nottinghamshire, where Gary was working at the time. And he went down to pick up Peterson and brought him back to Nottingham.
Did Notts ever forgive Gary for that?
I don't know. It's interesting, really, because Gary spent most of the journey trying to get KP to play cricket for RHP on a Sunday afternoon. But sadly, or possibly, well,
possibly
happily, he turned it down.
Not. Possibly not. Sadly, and again, it's something that we've spoke about. Even on our level, not our level, but the local sport in level, you're a long time finished. When you say, OK, that's enough, I'm not playing cricket, football, rugby anymore, the body can't take it, you're a long time washing on. And this is why I say to people in the mid, oh, I'm bored now, I'm 25 and I've had enough.
Mm.
Don't walk away from it.
Mm. There's an awful lot of people who haven't been lucky enough to make that decision, where they've been, you know, taken out of the game with a terrible injury at the age of, say, 22, 23. They would love to be an exhausted 28-year-old dragging himself out of bed on a Sunday morning, but when you come out of the game, you really, really miss it. And the one thing that surprised me was, I never understood what people said was, I don't miss the game itself as much, but I really miss the dressing room. I thought, what's he on about? And when I packed in at RHP at the age of 42, the one thing I really, really missed was not the cricket, but the atmosphere in the dressing room, which was second to none.
And I think that's what he alluded to as well, wasn't it? When he says you lose the buzz, don't you? And,
yeah.
Anyway, that's about it from... We've been here, there and everywhere tonight. We've gone from 10-year-olds who's won a football trophy and are so proud, with a proud teacher. We've talked to Megan Stevens, who's been playing rugby for 18 months and she's now a Midlands champion with two tries to her name. I mean, how good is that? Alan Swain, the president of the rugby club, so proud for what they all achieved on Saturday evening, and 25,000 plus into the coffers isn't a bad return either, is it? And my new mate Hoggy. tomorrow night, how do you beat that? Well, actually, I'm looking forward to tomorrow night, because I think it's going to be a cracker. Amber Owens is coming into Sport HQ to look back at the cross-country season. With her is the New York Athletic Club president, Gareth Bagley, and we've got a bit of a special lined up that Amber doesn't know an awful lot about, so that's going to be nice. And Joseph Monk is going to join us now. He's one of your favourites because he talks so well. He had a bad day at the National Cross Countries. It wasn't his fault, but all the same, he had a bad day. And he's still coming on the radio. That's how good that young man is. And talking of good, Stuart Preston's up now.